Question of Balance with your host, Ruth Coplin. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, discussing topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show. If this is the first time you've joined us, I'd like to let you know that It's a Question of Balance is a two-hour show in which we try to explore if we have more in common than divides us and balance the intellectual with the creative. In this, the first hour, I have an out-and-about feature where I go and interview people out on the street on a different topic each week. And we avoid politics, which often instantly polarizes people. Instead, we look at timeless issues underlying current events, politics in our daily lives, relevant to all of us, whether it be locally or nationally or globally. In the second hour, I feature in-depth interviews with highly talented guests from the arts. And for the arts interview in the second hour, I'm pleased to be interviewing BAFTA-nominated audio director, sound designer and composer Vincent Diamonte. And Vincent is known for his award-winning work as the music composer for the very popular games Flower and Cloud from innovative game developer That Game Company. And the soundtrack for Flower was released separately as an album due to popular demand, and Vincent is now the company's audio director, overseeing the music direction, composition and sound design of the studio's next project. And before joining the studio full-time, Vincent worked as a radio show host, games journalist, photographer and even an artist. And That Game Company states that the uniquely immersive nature Vincent brings to games could be attributed to his breadth of experience and his continued belief of the limitless possibilities in game audio design. And this is an area that is really providing a rich tapestry of possibility for composers, the gaming world. So I'm really looking forward to hearing some of Vincent's music and talking to him about that, and also his work teaching at USC. Well, in this hour, we're considering, is tipping a good thing? I've been out and about getting opinions on the street to get us thinking. And perhaps as you listen, you can wonder how you would have responded to the questions had I stopped you. Well, first this week, I spoke to Rachel and Tom. Let's hear what they had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Rachel.
Tom.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, is tipping a good thing? John Mualim in Wired magazine states, tipping arrived here from continental hotels and restaurants just before the turn of the century. Gunton's magazine called it offensively un-American and positively uneconomic. It was felt that tipping undermined the quid pro quo, the capitalist work ethic, and the whole idea of income. Tipping turned wages, which were supposed to be dependable, into something flexible. Obviously, tipping continued and is very common now in America. So I'm wondering, do you think tipping is a good thing?
Yes, I think so. I think, especially as we struggle with the minimum wage, and I think in the meantime, it sort of makes up that gap.
Okay, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, most people in the restaurant or bar industry are dependent upon tips. Yeah. So it's important to understand that and then tip accordingly, because their wage will often reflect the fact that the employer is understanding that their tips are going to take up a large percentage of what the income is that they're taking home.
I did a bit of research on this because a friend of mine said this. She's like, oh, well, they don't get paid minimum wage. Apparently, it's illegal not to pay waitstaff minimum wage in California. Not right. In other states, but in California, they are paid minimum wage.
Good.
So I don't know if that affects your argument at all.
But they are, but also because they know that they're getting taxed. They're getting tips. They get taxed on the tips, and so they're treated. I think they're actually taxed. Even they're assuming a tax rate on the tips, whether they get the tips or not. So, have you researched that? I mean, it's interesting how they treat the restaurant workers.
How can they tax them on money they don't receive?
Well, they assume when they get their paycheck. they assume that a certain rate of tip and tax, and that's actually deducted from their paycheck. So it's a little more complicated.
Okay, I can't speak to that. I know on federal tax returns you do have to declare if you have any tips. I would have assumed you were taxed on what you declared, but maybe not. So I can't speak to that.
Yeah. They're actually pretty aggressive on the taxing, on the assuming that you're getting tips, especially if it's cash.
One thing I was wondering is, do you think tipping is expected now, or is it still based on the level of service that you receive? Are you tipping, are you just giving 20% or 15%, or are you actually thinking about what service you get?
Usually, I default to always tip. If it's exceptionally poor service, then I'll reduce the tip.
Yeah, I would say tip is given. The amount is where there's flexibility. I think, you know, even if there is poor service, I always try to think about the other circumstances, like the cooking that could take a while, or something that's outside of the waiter's control or the bartender's control.
Right.
And so because of that, I would try to at least tip the tax amount. I always look at the tax and kind of tip accordingly based on the service that was provided.
Why do you feel you feel more compassionate towards wait staff than, say, other people who work for minimum wage, you know, cleaners, or they're not getting tips?
Well, I tip cleaners too. I mean, I think
Well, I mean, people are working like in a business where they're cleaning the offices at night, or they're cleaning the toilets or whatever. Yeah. There's lots of people working for minimum wage who don't get tips.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a larger structural issue. I mean, in the restaurant and industry, there's a space created for the tip, where in the other industries, it's there's not that opportunity to tip, and there's not the understanding that's really what's expected of the consumer.
Right.
Where in, you know, the restaurant industry, it's you know, required but kind of expected in some regards, in most regards, really.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to say that that's a good question, because now the hotels, I've stayed at hotels recently, and they're actually encouraging tips for the maid service. In the past, they never had any signage for that, but today they're actually just starting to recognize that and actually have that sign up in the rooms.
There's a bit of an issue there of tipping being used to supplement people's wages rather than the burden falling on the business to pay their employees
that's
properly.
That's a good question. You have good questions tonight. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that one. Probably.
Okay. One of the things I was going to say is that in the restaurant business, there's a clear sort of product and service. Mm. The food is your product, if you like, and then how it's delivered to you is the service. I mean, some of that is dependent on the kitchen, as you pointed out, you know, if the food is slow. But there is more of a differentiation. There's some things where tipping is required, where, like massage, for instance. Why do we tip massage therapists when we don't tip chiropractors? Or doctors, or osteopaths, or other people who are providing, you know, a complete product and service is all one thing, if you know what I mean. Is that something?
Yeah, I think you assume that the massage therapist is an independent worker for that, you know, is an independent worker, where a chiropractor owns a practice typically, so that you probably don't think about tipping them.
Okay.
How do I think about it?
So this kind of speaks to some of what insulted people when tipping first came here, which is that they felt like it was a patronization of the rich, of the poor, that basically they were getting charity handouts, you know, rather than being given a living wage, as we would call it now, you know, or a respectable, guaranteed wage. Have you ever thought about tipping in that sense? I don't think we generally do, but...
No, not now, especially when you talk to people who are in the industry and you know how much they depend upon the tips to create a livable wage, because the wage that they're earning from the business is not livable. And so I've always understood it as to be a positive thing to tip, and really, you know, not derogatory or demeaning in any regard. In fact, it could be seen as opposite if you don't do so. So I mean, that has always been my conceptualization.
You know, the corollary is with minimum paid workers, you know, businesses actually look to the government to pick up the other social services with food stamps. I mean, the other question can be asked, you know, that is that what's happening with the workers, with the owners who encourage their workers to get social services to complement their wages?
If they're not getting supplementation through tipping, yeah, then they're going to have to get it, yeah, from the government.
If there's a stat out that at least half the bank tellers are on some type of social service, you know, in New York City and San Francisco, that complement their earnings because, you know, they don't make enough money. So that's maybe the broader question.
A broader question of how we distribute
wealth
more evenly. That's
right.
One of the prime questions in America right now,
I think,
isn't it?
Yeah. Right.
Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. I really appreciate it.
All right, it's been fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck with that. So,
you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversation about this week's topic. Is tipping a good thing? If you have any comments, you can email me at ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'd love to hear your opinions. And also remember, if you go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, you can hear podcasts of all previous shows, all the different topics that we've done, and some very interesting arts guests. So be sure to head over there sometime. It's a question of balance.com. We're going to go to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, this is Jackie from Integrity Event Planning. Are you coordinating an event? Don't know how you'll get it all done? Stop sweating the small stuff. We plan everything from family events to fundraising and corporate events. Contact Integrity Event Planning for your next event. Check out our website, integrityeventplanning.com. Integrity, it's what sets us apart. With 16 years of experience, we negotiate with your bottom line and needs in mind. So sit back and relax and let us serve the champagne. We've got this.
For your next event, visit integrityeventplanning.com. That's integrityeventplanning.com.
Dream, baby, dream.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And in this hour, my on-the-street conversations for the Out and About feature. I hope the interviews are giving you some food for thought. And If you had stopped to talk to me on the street, what might you have said, do you think, if I was asking you these questions? Hope you might be turning that over in your mind right now and wondering what you think about this issue that we're discussing this week. Well, the next person who spoke to me was Bonnie. So let's hear her thoughts. Hi, my name's Ruth Copland of It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for stopping and agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
Bonnie.
Well, thanks so much, Bonnie, for being part of our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, is tipping a good thing? According to Wired magazine in 1916, William Scott wrote The Itching Palm, where he laid out the case for tipping being a moral disease that robbed workers of their self-respect. His opinion was that a tip represented what one American is willing to pay to induce another American to acknowledge inferiority, the price of pride. Tipping was seen as patronizing and demeaning. Obviously, tipping continued as the tippers wouldn't stop tipping, whether through compassion or bourgeois guilt. And today, tipping is accepted. Some might even say expected. So I'm wondering, do you think tipping is a good thing?
I do think it's a good thing.
And why do you think so?
A lot of the professions that we tip are severely underpaid, and if it wasn't for the tipping, they would not make enough money to even live on. So, you know, for example, waitresses, waiters depend on the tips. The wages they make are not sufficient. I also think it's just a way of showing your appreciation for good service, and it's a way of expressing that. And so when someone's done a good job, you give them a big tip. When they haven't done such a good job, you give them less of a tip. And it's your way of letting people know how you feel about their service.
Just to speak to the first part of what you said, do you feel that it's optimal that tipping should be supplementing people's wages?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if they were making enough money without the tips, then... you know, then it would be a whole different thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a way for these employers to get away with not having to pay living wages.
So I think that's what, when it first came here, that's what the union workers felt, that it was a way for employers to underpay or not provide a reliable wage, because they felt that, you know, if tipping is involved in what you earn, then you don't have a guaranteed income anymore. Your income is flexible.
That's true. Yeah. And that's a good point.
Yeah. Why do you think we tip for some things and not for others? I mean, the restaurant industry seems more clear because you've got a product and a very clear service of the person who's serving you. But something like massage therapists who are providing a service, just like a doctor or a chiropractor or an osteopath, none of whom we tip. Why do you think we tip? Do you think, again, it's the case of you feel they're underpaid and therefore you have to supplement what they earn?
No. And that's a good question. I've often wondered that myself. Why are some professions tipped and other professions aren't? I personally used to be a massage therapist, and so I loved when I got the tips, of course, because it was just like, oh, you know, it's hard work, and you know, you're charging what you think is a fair amount, but when someone gives you a tip, it's really nice.
Yeah.
But I don't know why some services are tipped and others aren't, and I don't know who made that decision, how that was decided.
Do you think that tipping is expected now in the professions where tipping is common? Do you think it's expected rather than what you're saying, it's a nice thing?
I think in the restaurant industry, it's definitely expected. I think it's considered rude if you don't tip. In massage, I think it's kind of expected, but it's not mandatory. You know.
And do you think restaurant workers, if they get a low tip, actually consider that their service was bad, or just that they think you were mean?
Well, I think they might just think you were cheap.
That's my experience. I think that you know, it seems that the tip is expected regardless of the service you receive.
You know, I've worked in all the service professions in my life. When I was young, I was a waitress, and I was a massage therapist, and now I'm in a profession that's not tipped. But I've been in those professions, and so I know how much the tipping means. And so when I'm out and about, I wouldn't dream of not tipping, because I know how much the tips mean to these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you feel comfortable with distributing some of your income to other people who are not paid as well? Because it sounds like that's kind of what your motivation
is. My feeling is if I'm not prepared to tip, I'm not going to purchase the service. I think of it as being part of the tab.
And you don't think there's any onus on the employer to be paying their workers better?
Well, I think they should be paying them better too. I think that they should, but they don't, so.
Right. Also, the tips are very high in America, or at least in California. I can't speak to other states, but it's really considered 20%, mm-hmm. whereas in Europe it's more between 5 to 12.5 would be the top tip. Do you think 20% is a bit high? Or does that seem okay to you?
It's high, but I think given the wages these people are making, it's reasonable. I think in Europe they make more of a living wage in those professions, don't they?
Yes, yeah. Certainly not in Britain, but on the continent, yes. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, well, thank you so much for stopping. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations. Well, next I spoke to Fred and Anthony. They were jumping in there, so let's hear what they have to say. Hi, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Fred Clay.
Anthony Williams.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, is tipping a good thing? When tipping first came to America from Europe in the early 19th century, it was not well received and was considered un-American and anti-capitalistic. According to Wired magazine, all over the country, hotels and other businesses advertised no tipping policies. And the Anti-Tipping Society of America, the Anti-Gimme League, and the Society for the Prevention of Useless Giving were formed. One barbers union spokesman stated, "This tipping custom is base, wrong, unjust, and degrading. Tipping persisted because tippers wouldn't stop tipping, whether through compassion or guilt." So I'm wondering what you think. Do you think tipping is a good thing?
Currently, I think it is.
And why would you think that?
Because typically, a lot of waiters and waitresses, bartenders and such, they get minimum wage. And so to supplement their income, to bring them up to a salary appropriate to their experience, tipping is required.
Do you think, though, that the onus to pay them better should be on the employer rather than having to supplement from patrons?
I think that's a worthy consideration, worthy of discussion and debate. Currently, with the situation that it is, I feel comfortable tipping folks for good service.
Okay, and what are your thoughts?
Oh, man. You're asking me. I like to analyze stuff. I like to really think about it before I answer.
You can think a bit more if you want.
But I see the pros and the cons on both sides. I can understand that. But people have to eat. And if people aren't making a working wage, then how are they gonna, eat? Why would you work a job and you can't afford to pay your rent and put food on your table? So
you have to
look at it from that side.
So obviously there's a lot of people who earn minimum wage who don't receive tips. So is your argument that you think waiting staff have a higher expertise than warrants being paid minimum wage? Or do you think that everybody who's paid minimum wage in an ideal world would be getting tips?
In the service industry, like bartenders and waiters and waitresses, absolutely. Myself, some of the things that constitute a fine meal, the quality of food is one, but also the quality of service is really, really important. And I base my tipping when I go to a fine restaurant based upon the quality of service in addition to the food.
Right. So that was one of my questions. Do you think that there is an expectation of tips in California? When you go to restaurants, it's just expected that you will tip rather than it being based on the quality of service. Is that something you've experienced?
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think that most of the time it's expected.
And one of the things I feel is that if you tip less because the service wasn't as good, it's more considered that you're just mean rather than that the service was bad. Has that ever occurred to you?
Absolutely. I have left a penny on the table because I had deplorable service to give the waiter or waitress a message that right. I was thoroughly displeased with their service.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think that's a better approach to, like, give nothing or a really low tip. Because if you sort of give 10% because it wasn't good, then they just think you're mean, I think. But my mother once went to a restaurant where she left no tip because the service was bad. And the waitress actually ran after her down the street and said, "You didn't leave me a tip." And my mother was like, "Oh my gosh, well, the service was terrible." And it was like, there's sort of an expectation, I think, with some people. Some things that we tip for, like maybe massage therapy, for instance, that seems strange to me in some ways, because we don't tip doctors or chiropractors or other people, physical therapists. Do you think there's some things that we give tips for that perhaps, you know, it's not quite as understandable as the service industry?
I typically don't give, when I do get a massage, I typically don't tip the masseuse unless it was something super duper outstanding. Mm. But typically I don't feel obligated like I would a waiter or a bartender to tip.
Right. What about you?
Ask the question again.
Do you think that there's some things where tipping is required, where, you know, it's a sort of spurious thing? Like, if you went to have a massage, would you feel, I'm having a service, you know, like I've gone to have a physical therapy treatment?
I'm sure people don't take advantage of it.
That is another area where people often feel they're underpaid, but then again, it's taking the onus off the employer to pay the people properly.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
To supplement the wages.
That's what you probably should do. That's what probably needs to happen. Something needs to happen where the wages that people make, they have to get supplemented in some kind of way. Maybe you need to stop tipping. Maybe you need to stop that altogether for something that actually happened, for change to actually happen.
I think certainly you're not going to get service industry people paid better while the employers feel that their wages are being supplemented with tips.
Right.
That's for sure.
That's
what
needs to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have change, something needs to change, right?
Yes, it's true. There's got to be an impetus. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And the other thing is, in Europe, tips in restaurants range from 5 to 12.5%. In America, you know, 20% is common. Do you think that's high, or does that feel applicable to you?
Myself, the difference between like a masseuse and a bartender or waiter or waitress is the wage. A masseuse, when I pay for a massage, you know, it can range between $50 to $100 per hour. And I assume that the masseuse is getting at least 20, 30, 50%, you know, maybe $70 for that hour. Whereas I know for a fact that a waiter or bartender, someone in the service industry, is actually only getting minimum wage, whatever it may be, given the municipality.
Right.
And that's why I'm inclined, to tip, you know, 15 or 20% for good service. 15%. I consider a minimum, 20-25% if it's outstanding service, and also depends on the bill.
Oh, right. So if it was a very expensive bill, would you leave less?
Not less than 15%.
Right.
But okay. Possibly not 20 or 25.
Yeah. Because I know I've got used to it now, but when I first came from England, it was almost unbelievable to leave 20% of your bill. I mean, it just was like a fortune. It just felt, when you're not used to it, you know, when once you're used to it, you just know that when you go out, your meal isn't going to cost what it says on the menu. It's going to cost another fifth more than that.
If you're comfortable with 20%, why not up it to 30 or 40%? See how comfortable you are with that, right?
Well, maybe we could get used to that. I guess you can get used to anything. So you've never seen tipping as patronizing in any way. One of the things union workers and people were worried about in America when it first came here was that it was a way for the rich to sort of patronize the poor. One person felt that it was a way for one American to... where's my quote? He said it was the price of pride, the price for what one American is willing to pay to induce another American to acknowledge inferiority. I don't think that's what we feel generally today, but is that something you've ever thought about, that there's a kind of patronizing element to tipping?
Not in my experiences, although I can't say that that's not the root of tipping in the United States, although now in 2015, I consider it a cultural norm. Now, maybe in the 1800s or 1700s, perhaps it was different.
Yes.
But today, I just consider it a cultural norm. And for things to change, the cultural norm needs to change as well.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. What about you? Have you ever thought about it as demeaning? I guess in some instances, there could be a case where because people are giving a tip, they feel that's an excuse to treat people rudely. I don't know. I'm thinking in certain circumstances, you know, where people don't treat valets very well or something like that. You know, it's like I'm buying the opportunity to just treat you like you're less than me. I don't know. Maybe not in the restaurant business, but maybe in other things. Is that something you've ever come across or thought about? Not really.
Well, actually, I have thought about it. Actually, yeah. I see where that, how that could happen, and I could see how that could open a door for people to be dehumanized. Mm. And so I think maybe probably the best thing to probably like to rectify that would be to have some kind of experimentation. I think that's good to talk about things, but I think it's good to talk about things to a certain point. And when you don't have no kind of change or no kind of ratification of the situation, then it becomes like it's like a bell that rings and nobody acts upon what's going on. So
this is kind of what you were saying earlier about something has to change for things to change.
Yeah, I think it's good to talk about things, but like I said, I don't like talking about things, and I feel like that's all we do nowadays. We debate, we talk, and we don't act.
Mm, right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Well, I really appreciate your thoughts. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my on-the-street conversations on this week's topic. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore, and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my On the Street conversations. We heard in the break there from Bookshop Santa Cruz, and I wanted to let you know that they have some exciting author events coming up. Author Lauren Groff, the award-winning New York Times best-selling author of The Monsters of Templeton and Arcadia, is appearing on September 27th. On September 25th, best-selling writer Christopher Moore will be talking about his delightfully weird and funny sequel to the New York Times bestseller A Dirty Job. And on September the 30th, Caitlin Doughty will be talking about her book Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, which relates to her experiences working at a crematorium. And Caitlin is a Los Angeles-based mortician, death theorist, and the founder of the Order of the Good Death, which is a community group of funeral industry professionals, academics, and artists exploring ways to prepare a death-phobic culture for their inevitable mortality. Very interesting topic area. So there's three great author events coming up, and you can find out all about these events in September at the website bookshopsantacruz.com, bookshopsantacruz.com. Well, getting back to our topic this week, is tipping a good thing? The last person that I spoke to this week was Maureen. So let's hear what she had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
Maureen.
Well, thanks, Maureen, for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're considering, is tipping a good thing? John Mullen in Wired magazine states that tipping came to America from Europe and was not well received. William Scott in 1916 wrote, tipping and the aristocratic idea it exemplifies is what we left Europe to escape. It is a cancer in the breast of democracy. This because it was felt tipping robbed workers of a guaranteed income and their self-respect. Obviously, tipping has continued and it is very common now in America. So I'm wondering, do you think tipping is a good thing?
Well, you know, that's interesting you're asking me. I was thinking about, you know, different examples. And I can't say a yes or no. As a consumer, I think sometimes it gets very confusing. Once in a while, I do use it as a vote of getting really bad service and maybe not leaving a tip. But then I also have a son who delivers pizzas. And I know when he gets really good tips after driving all over looking for a house, you know, in the middle of the mountains, he's really stoked, you know, when he comes home and has had a good tip night. So I kind of go both directions, I guess.
Yeah. What you said made me also consider, do you think that tipping has become more expected rather than a gift to someone when they've gone out of their way to do a really good job? I mean, you're talking about your son going to a really difficult place. Well, that person might be really grateful and appreciate that, and therefore they give a tip and you're really happy and it's all a lovely experience. But it's certainly in the restaurant industry, it seems to have become it's just expected. Is that something you have experienced?
Yeah, I think that is what it's more become. It is expected. And in fact, what I hear from people that work in restaurants is they prefer that the tip be made by cash and not put on your credit card statement, because the government assumes you get a certain percentage whether you get that or not. You know, if you have certain wages, then they just assume a percentage. So what I understand is it doesn't work out so well sometimes for the servers, because regardless of what they get, they're having to pay a certain percentage.
What's your opinion on the fact that tipping is being used to supplement people's wages? Do you think that undermines their salary? Do you think it would be a better situation if they could be paid more?
Well, I'm not sure that would actually happen, because a lot of the jobs where tipping is involved, at least in the restaurant business, it's probably pretty much minimum wage. And I don't think if there was no tipping, that those wages would automatically go up. The other place I'm thinking about tipping is like in service salons, you know, for hair or waxing or something like that. And that's another place where I don't think there would be an automatic shift in the wages up. So So
that's
maybe
kind of more of a gray area, those sort of places that you've mentioned, though, because in a way you are paying for a product service, like when you go to a chiropractor or a physical therapist, you know, you're paying for something specific.
Right.
And, you know, you wouldn't expect to have to tip your doctor for doing it particularly well or whatever, do you know what I mean? Or so it's curious, I think, the things we do tip for. In the restaurant industry, it's more clear cut. There's a product that's the food, and then there's the actual delivery of that and how it gets to you, which is the service.
Right.
Do you think in some areas that you have you ever wondered why some tips are required?
Well, one of the things that I've heard is that, you know, if you go to a person who's providing a service, once again, it's thinking like a salon, you know, like it's like you don't have to tip if it's the owner of the salon, but you tip if it's an employee. Kind of, and it gets very complicated. It's like, what is the right rule? I don't know. I still feel like there is an expectation of tipping. And certainly it is a way of as a, if you've had a really good experience, it's a way of, you know, an extra way of thanking somebody because they're going to get paid their basic rate anyway.
Yeah. That was one of the things that concerned unions when tipping first came to America, is that it would undermine wages and a reliable wage, because if you are relying on tips for your income, it's flexible. You don't know what you're going to be earning. So that is one argument, you know, for not having tipping. But
the flip side of that is it would hopefully encourage the person to always try to do as good a job as possible. And if you're going to get a guaranteed wage, you might not be so motivated. And if you're going to get paid the same, you might not be as motivated.
That is one of the arguments. But then when I thought about that, I was thinking, well, but what about all the jobs that you don't get tips for? Is there no other motivation than money to do your job? I mean, there's a lot. What about retail? People who work in retail or people who are cleaners or, you know, there's a lot of jobs that are minimum wage where you don't get tips. So is the only motivation money to do a good job and be proud of what you do?
I don't know. I think tips, when I think about where places where I'm tipping, it's where I have a very direct experience, you know, in the service. So like if it's, you know, if it's a retail person, I mean, I might go up to the cash register and they check me out, but if they haven't done anything else, it's not much of a relationship, I guess. Whereas, you know, some of those other things, you have a more personal service going on. And like in the restaurants, I think it's common that they have a tip jar. And so like the, you know, the bus people and the dishwashers and everybody, I've heard of that. You know, everybody enjoys, not just the front end people, you know, get the service. I think that's really cool. Yeah. We're places that do that.
Yeah. In a Huffington Post article called 9 Reasons Why We Should Ban Tipping, Hunter Stewart states, the tipping economy is particularly unfriendly to women. According to an October 2014 report from Restaurant Opportunities Centers United, 80% of female servers say they've been sexually harassed at some point in their careers. And sexual harassment is more prevalent in states that only pay servers the federal sub-minimum wage of $2.13 an hour, as opposed to states that mandate a higher minimum wage, such as California. Since women restaurant workers living off tips are forced to rely on customers for their income rather than their employer, these workers must often tolerate inappropriate behavior from customers, co-workers, and management, the report says. This dynamic contributes to the restaurant industry status as the single largest source of sexual harassment claims in the U.S. Do you think this is an argument for people in the service industry to be paid a salary, you know, so that they don't have to demean themselves, which is one of the reasons, you know, originally when it first came that people thought that might be a result of it?
I don't see a big correlation between tipping or not tipping and that kind of behavior. I think that's going, you know, I think there's a whole nother problem going on that people would have that kind of behavior towards people that are helping them and vice versa. So I don't know. I don't see tipping as a big part of that.
I don't think it's causing it, but a person's level of tips is going to be affected by how they receive that behavior. You know, if they tell someone, I'm sorry, I don't want to be treated like that, I don't want you to slap my bottom or whatever, you know, then they're not going to leave them a tip. So there's a sort of impetus to perhaps absorb behavior you wouldn't from anybody else because it's going to affect what you're earning.
Right, yeah. I could see that a little bit, but again, I don't see that as a major thing.
That's not a reason you would give to stop tipping. You just think it's a wider problem that we need to address in right. different ways.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And do you feel happy to not leave a tip if you have bad service? Or do you think there's a pressure that no matter what, you have to leave something?
I've done both things. You know, there have been times where I have not left a tip, you know, to make a statement. And then other times where I've left a very modest tip, you know, even though other days I might not have left anything at all. So yeah. It just kind of, I try to look at the whole situation and you know,
yeah.
But I don't, as a consumer, I don't think it's clear cut at all.
No. Is part of your motivation in leaving a tip because you feel sorry that they're underpaid and you want to help them earn more?
Well, I don't know that. I think so much about what they're getting paid, but it's more the practice or, you know, the procedure around it that, you know, you give a good tip when you have good service and you don't leave such a good tip when you don't get a good service. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of more of a barometer of service, I guess, but okay. as opposed to kind of a real social statement.
Yeah.
At least what goes on in my mind.
Yeah. And finally, in Europe, tips in restaurants range from 5 to 12.5%. Whereas in the US, it's common to tip 20 or even 25% in restaurants. And when you come from outside America, that seems shocking. You know, it's just right. such a huge addition to what your bill is. Of course, once you get used to it, you just accept it. But do you feel that 20% is right, you know, about the right level for tips, or do you think that is high?
I use 20% on the high. If I have the discretion, I use that on the high side. So I go between 15 and 20%. There are a lot of places in Europe where they just add it in automatically now.
Right.
You know, which, and then usually in what I've found here in the U.S. is they only do that when they're like really large parties, you know.
Yes.
You know, yeah. in the restaurant, but it's not usually routine. But 20% is kind of high, and then there is that, is it 20% before tax? After, I mean, you know, if it's really funny. So if you go out to lunch at work, you know, there's always a scramble to not be the one to try to figure out, you know, who owes what and all of that.
Yeah.
And so just because it's like, really, does it have to be this complicated?
Yeah. There are some restaurants in America who've approached it in different ways. Some restaurant in New York actually puts on their bill, we remunerate our staff sufficiently by salary, and so we do not accept tips. So that's one way to do it. And then also there's restaurants where they've put a set service charge and then they distribute that equally to all their staff, because they also, by law, if you get cash tips, they're not allowed to be distributed to kitchen staff. So if they add a service charge, then they can equally give it to everybody, which increases everybody's pay, but then of course doesn't actually reflect the service that you receive. So I don't know what your thoughts are on those approaches.
Well, I'm familiar with one. I work at the university, and at the university center, which is like a restaurant, they say don't tip, you know, and it's mostly students who are the servers. And again, people don't pay any, so it's actually the opposite. People don't pay any attention to that, you know, because they're used to doing it, and you're thinking, yeah. Oh, these poor students, you know, they're, you know. So I would just say, I mean, it'd be nice to have a really kind of clear, simple, consistent, or at least something that's pretty accepted, you know, more accepted. And right now it just yeah. seems to be all over the map. But I'm okay if a business, you know, puts it on, tells me what it's for, and then, you know, and I just know that up front, and then they're figuring out how to distribute it. I would be okay with that, too.
Yeah.
You know, I would just like to know how it's going to work, you know,
yeah.
and just not make it be a moment of stress at the end of a nice meal or service or whatever it is.
Yes, yeah. So. Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And thanks very much to all the people who took part in my on the street conversations this week. It is rather daunting to be stopped by somebody and asked a question apropos of nothing. So I do appreciate very much people taking the time to think about something they may not have been thinking about. And I hope that you out there listening have also been stimulated intellectually to think about this in a new way, or to clarify what your ideas on it are. If you have any comments, remember you can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I always like to hear your opinions, and if you have any suggestions for topics too, that would be great. Next up is my special guest from the arts, BAFTA-nominated audio director, sound designer, composer, and USC faculty, Vincent Diamonte. Vincent has produced award-winning work as the music composer for popular games Flower and Cloud from innovative game developer That Game Company, amongst many other musical projects. And he's known for his ability to score music with maximum emotional impact and relevance to the content. And he's gained a dedicated following of music lovers who want to emotionally engage with video games and their music. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him. Also because the games created by That Game Company that he writes music for are not perhaps the kind of games you might think of when you think of video games. So I hope you can stick around for that. I'll see you after the break.